We are in the middle of a sermon series that has to do with finding out how we live, and are we always living on the edge? Are we always living at the max? Do we have any room at all where we have, you know, wiggle room sometimes we call it, so that we're not always stressed out, whether it be with our time or with our money or with our relationships? And sometimes we can have so many things going on in our life, it just becomes so difficult to manage, and then we get a lot of stress. Maybe we get depression. Maybe we have health issues. Maybe we have relationship issues, and perhaps some of us know that. Sometimes even your family, there's just a lot of added stress when we're overloaded with just so many things and things to do and places to go, and it seems like sometimes we just take on more activities, and instead of trying to manage and understand what's best for our life, there's times where we are just so inundated with so much, so overloaded. Yeah, we're just very, very, very busy, but we're maybe not as productive as we know we ought to be or we should be, and certainly not as much as we could be or as much as God wants us to be. So this series is called High Noon. It's got to do with that time where we say, we've got to make some decisions. We've got to cut some things out. We've got to take a stand. We've got to confront the enemy if necessary, if that is something that's trying to take us away from the things that are most important. And maybe things take us away from God. Things that take us away from our family and our responsibilities, our commitments there. Things that take us away from living the way that God has designed us and called us to live. And so sometimes we have to make those decisions. This idea of the noon, it's got our words in there, which is sometimes we have to say no to something so we can be on to something that's much better. And so over the last couple of weeks, we've looked at different things that we sometimes get caught up in and things that we may have to say no to, that we have to cut back in, so that we can live a much better life. We can live a more joyful life, and we can live a life that is more on purpose. And so, of course, today, it's exciting. We're going to talk about sex. And the reason being is, if you watched the Super Bowl and saw the commercials, you may have heard about this movie coming out, 50 Shades of Grey. Maybe you're aware that there's a book out called 50 Shades of Grey. It's a trilogy, three in the series. 100 million books have been sold. 100 million. That is more books than all of the Harry Potter series combined. Okay? As a matter of fact, the author has been named one of the most 100 influential people. Well, what does that mean? Influential. She's influencing people through these books. And so a lot of times there's a talk. Maybe some people here have read it. So let's be honest. A crowd this size, I'm sure there's a few, maybe many, that have already read the book, because it's kind of a big deal. Maybe you've heard of other people that have read it. Maybe you saw the commercial during the Super Bowl. They spent $4.5 million for 30 seconds so you could see the commercial of a movie that's coming up next weekend. And let me tell you something. This is just so romantic, right? Because next weekend is Valentine's weekend. It's not a coincidence. It's coming out next weekend. Valentine's weekend, 50 Shades of Grey movie. And it's a movie that you don't need to see, you shouldn't see. If you've read the book, I'm sorry you've read the book, you shouldn't have read the book. And what it is, it's called pornography. So the book is not pictures pornography. The book works like this. It puts pictures in your mind with pornography. And I know that if you work, you know, you've had people in your workplace talk about it. And this is the way the conversations go. Most books are about 500 pages long. And the conversation goes like this. I started reading the book last night, and I was up all night reading it. I couldn't put it down. When's lunch break? Because at lunch break, I'm going to pick up that book and I'm going to start where I left off. You know what this is called? It's called an addiction, right? It's an addiction. And so what's going to happen if you read the book, or if you go see the movie, it's going to begin, if you've not already begun on that path, of being a sexual addict. It's kind of the gateway. It's the start. Most people don't start off with heroin. This is the pot that's going to lead you to a heroin addiction. So that's figurative. I'm not saying you're going to become a drug addict. You're going to become a sex addict. This is the way it works. You want to know something that's not new. I know a lot of people say, well, you know, wow, this is so brand new. Now, the medium, in other words, the method of transferring this to you through a movie, maybe fairly new. Being able to see things on the internet, the accessibility is certainly very new. When I was growing up, you'd have to go to the store to buy some magazines. Or if you were old enough to get into a club, you could go into, which is the silliest word of all, a gentleman's club, which is basically a strip club. It's got nothing to do with gentlemen. There are no gentlemen in there. Gentlemen do not go to these places. But it was more difficult to access it. It was certainly more difficult to get away with it, right? But today, you can do it in the privacy of your own home. Oh, but, you know, why are we talking about this today? It seems, oh, there's some kids in here, right? But did you know that the average age for boys to be exposed to pornography, 11 years old? So if you have a boy around 11 years old, we're in the average. Do you know some boys start later? Which means what? Some boys start much earlier of pornography on the computer. So usually that comes across in your home, on your computer. If they do have a electronic device that looks something like this, and they have access to the internet, they can access it. And these are very hard to control. Sometimes in your computer at home, you can put controls on about what sites they go to. Harder on the tablet. And you say, well, they're not doing it at my house. They may be doing it at somebody else's house. If they have friends, I'm guessing your kids have friends. Go to their maybe your friend's parents. Your child's friend's parents don't have so many controls. Maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't care. So it's a problem. Let's just say it's a problem. So what does the Bible say about this? What does God want us to know about this? Are there some things that we can learn? Well, this is what Paul would say to a church as they're struggling with a lot of sexual issues. In 1 Corinthians, in chapter 5, they're dealing with a problem with a man who is sleeping with his father's wife. So we'd say, here's a man, maybe, I don't know how old he was, but I'm guessing maybe in his 20s or 30s, and he's sleeping with his stepmom. Okay? They're having sex. And they're Christians, and he attends church on a regular basis. And Paul says, listen, you gotta deal with that. That doesn't continue to go on. That's not right. And then Paul, in the next chapter, chapter 6, has to talk about this problem that comes up sometimes, even in the church, with sexual immorality. He says, well, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit? Okay, so he's talking to Christians. Now, if you're here today and you're not a Christian, I just want to let you know what God's will for your life is. But you're not bound, you're not constrained, you've not made a commitment to follow God's will. But if you're a Christian, this is not an option. You've already committed to Christ, say, I'm going to follow Christ and love Him. And now God's Spirit is living within me. So God has created me for a specific purpose. And now He has redeemed me from sin and from damnation. And now He's given me His Spirit that lives within me. So we've got the Spirit. And so the picture is, especially for the Jews maybe, is, you know, in the Old Testament, the Spirit of God, it just seemed, and God was not confined just to the temple or just to the Holy of Holies, not just to the Ark of the Covenant, but in their mind, you know, this is kind of the presence of God. This is getting close to God. This is where God lives. And now it's saying, well, God lives in the same way God lives in you. He lives in your life. He lives in your heart. And so in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, this is the context. All the way through this, he's talking about sexual appetite. A few verses earlier, he's saying, you know, are you controlled by the appetites of the, you know, the world says, you know, it says all things are permissible, all things are available, all things are okay. And Paul says, no, the world may say that, but not everything's beneficial, not everything's helpful, not everything is going to help you get to the place where you want to be. And then he talks about, well, a lot of this, you know, food for the stomach for the food. And what that's saying is, oh, you know, I've got all these physical desires. Now he's going to swing into a different analogy. He's talking about sexual desires now, because look what he goes on to say. Actually, this is the previous verse when he's talking about the temple living within you. But this is why God lives within us. So now we're going to flee from sexual immorality. Flee. Run. Paul told Timothy the same thing. Flee from the youthful lust. We sang that song. How shall the young secure their hearts? right? It's being in God's Word, being close to God, drawing close to Him, but fleeing sexual immorality. In our mind, we maybe remember Joseph in the Old Testament. And so here's another picture, right, of what? Sexual immorality. So here's Potiphar's wife that's trying to seduce a young man. And so sometimes we think, oh, it's always the men. You know, the men are always the aggressors. They're always the hunters. They're always trying to get what they want sexually. Well, here's a woman that's trying to take advantage of Joseph. And he kept saying, no, no. He kept trying to resist. And eventually she just made up a story. And she accused him wrongly. And he had to pay dearly for being pure and being righteous and being godly. Right? You flee, that's what he had to do. All other sins a man commits are outside of his body. And I don't understand all of this. He's saying, list all the sins you want, and they are all something that's external. Now, a lot of the sins that people commit, we know, can affect your mind, it can affect your heart, it can affect your physical body. But he's saying here, sexual immorality, it does something to you. And maybe he's saying it does something to your psyche. It does something to your mind. It does something to the way you view people. It does something in your relationship with God, and you can sin in any, I don't care if you're a thief, I don't care if you're a drug addict, or if you're a serial killer. There's something about sexual morality that's different. Wow, that should turn on, wow, we should be very careful. What's he talking about? What can we do? I don't want to get involved in this if it's going to destroy me, unlike anything else can destroy me. He who sins sexually sins against his own body. And this is a problem we see over and over again, don't we? Of sins. And you know, I know sometimes it's sins that have been committed against children. And those children grow up. And they're never the same. And I'm sorry. I apologize publicly for all the girls and boys. Maybe as an adult when you were a girl or a boy, were taken advantage of sexually. Maybe it was a family member, family friend, could have been a stranger. God forbid it was somebody from the church. It happened. And as a church here, I take the stand, we're not covering any of that crap up again. That's the nicest, I'm sorry if you're offended by the word crap, I was thinking about a much worse word. Because there had been some very cowardly men in leadership that sometimes swept it underneath the carpet. And I pray for their souls. But I pray for the people that have been hurt. Never the same again. And sometimes that sin continues on. Sometimes the effects of those sins continue on. Sometimes it destroys marriages when those children grow up to be adults. So it's serious. It's serious. It's not something that we just say, oh, well, you know, good luck. I hope it goes okay. Have a nice life. We'll say a prayer for you. No, there's something about this. It destroys people. It's clear throughout the Bible how this works. You know, we use the example of a woman that was trying to entice and seduce Joseph. But there was another man. I mean, there's many examples throughout the Bible, but here's one. King David had a son named Amnon. And Amnon, we would say, fell in love with his stepsister. So she was also the daughter of King David, but different mother. So they would be half brother, half sister, right? Half brothers, half sister. He fell in love with her. He was seeking many times to have a sexual relationship with her. And she refused. She knew it was wrong. She knew it was immoral. She knew it was ungodly. She knew that this would not happen. So you know what he did? This is in the Bible. It sounds crazy that it's in the Bible. Not that it just happened, but that you'd actually record it. It uses the words. So he brought her in, he seduced her, and he raped her. Against her will. Of course, I know that's what rape is. I just want to emphasize that she absolutely wanted nothing to do with it, and he forced himself, and he raped her. And the idea is this, that as you follow the story, it says that he loved her so much. Now, you know it wasn't love, but that's the way it's described. It was not love at all. But he loved her so much that he ended up raping her. But then you know what it says after that? He hated her with the same degree as the love he used to have. In other words, his love was just so out of control. Guess what? Now he's taking advantage of her. Now his hate for her is complete. And why did he hate her? It was all his own doing. If you'd like to read that story sometime, it's not a bedtime story. 2 Samuel chapter 13. Very serious. How do people get to that point? How does this happen? How does this happen to people that grow up, we would, you know, say David in Christian home, in a godly home? Now we know David did not exactly have a pristine record as far as his ability to control his sexual desires either. But how does this happen? Let's look at some other verses here. In verse 20 of 1 Corinthians 6, you're not your own. You've been bought with a price. Therefore, honor God with your body. That's what we're to do. So I just wrote, and again, most of these are not new. These are sexual sins that people commit today on a regular basis. And many people are participating in many of these, right? It's not just, oh, we just have a problem with one of these. Because the problem with the sexual sin, and again, you can study this about how it affects your brain. It's the same way that addiction, somebody who is a heroin addict, the way it rewires and affects their brain, the high that they are desiring from their drugs. It's the same thing with sexual addiction. It creates a lot of anticipation. It creates a lot of desire, appetite, hunger, and then it gets to the point where people cannot control themselves. You know this is the way it is. Because you've met people that say, I don't know how I got into it, but I can't stop. And I know that if I get caught, it's going to ruin my marriage. It's going to ruin my career. It's going to ruin my life. And so for a few minutes of pleasure, I'm giving everything up. And you feel like saying, well, how stupid are you? What are you thinking? The fact is, they're addicted, right? And I know places where you work, some places have a policy, which is not a bad policy. No porn at work. And yet people do, and they get fired for it. You know they've gotten fired. You know these people that have gotten fired. Why? Well, I was doing porn at work. So you have, like, you couldn't wait until you got home to do it at home. You had to do it on the work computer. Why? I'm addicted. I couldn't say no. I just needed that high one more time. Well, how do you get out of this? How do you escape this? So the lesson to start with, I mean, if you're not into it yet, don't get into it. Stay away. You'll have better luck with heroin. Because I think we have a better understanding of how to help a heroin addict as opposed to how to help a porn addict. Don't start. And if you're in it, there are ways that you can find help. And so if you do go to our website and go to the resources page, there's a bunch of links on many different areas, but one of the links, we've got about 10 different websites you can go to just by clicking to that website that will help you get some advice and some help and some direction, maybe even join a support group, things that can help to get out of some of these sexual addictions. And it's not going to be easy. So Jesus said this when he's talking about sexual sin. This is in verse 27. He's talking about committing adultery. Near the end of this section, he talks about divorce and why people divorce and that type of, not necessarily the reason for divorce, but the consequence of divorce. And so all the way through this, he's talking about a sexual kind of a sin in the context. So you got to follow the context, but we see it's sexual. So he said, you've heard it is said, do not commit adultery. In other words, guys and girls, you know, we say, just don't go out and sleep with your neighbor, sleep with somebody you're not married to. Do not sleep with a prostitute. Do not be involved sexually with anyone else except the one you're married to. Do not commit adultery. But Jesus said this, if you look at a woman and you lust after her, you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. And so that's the fine line, isn't it? Because guys used to say, well, I've never committed adultery, but I look at pornography. A girl may say, well, I don't commit adultery, but I read 50 Shades of Grey. And so what happens is, this is what you're thinking about. This is what you become addicted to. And so it leads to other things. And so this is what Jesus would say some of these things could lead to, because this is the context if you read through it. If your right eye causes you to sin, so that's looking at something, and again, the context is something in a sexual nature. He's not talking about looking at a brand new sports car. It may be included in another passage, but that's not what he's talking about here. If your right eye causes you to sin because you're lusting after another woman, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown out. So what's he saying? If you've got this kind of a problem, this sexual problem of lust and pornography and desiring, and even though you've never committed the act, he's saying this. What he's not saying, first of all, is don't come to church next week with both of your eyes out, okay? Because that just would not be very nice. We would know. We don't want to know these things. But what he's saying, you take whatever drastic measure you can take. I mean, if I said, listen, you take your eye out, you'd say, well, is there anything else I can do? I said, well, quit it. I'll choose that one. I quit. Right? Whatever drastic, it may be severe. It may be like, hey, you know, I tried emailing you the other day. How come you didn't respond? I got rid of my computer. I don't have a computer anymore. And I went back to the old cell phones where I can't even access the internet anymore. What, are you going back to the Stone Age? What's that all about? Got rid of it. Well, then why don't we just come over to your place and we can watch TV. And, you know, maybe we can do some, order some movies. I don't have that package anymore. I cannot order movies. Pay-per-view. It's out. Really? Yeah, it's pretty drastic. And people will think you're crazy. And so your friend says, well, let's go see a movie. It's R-rated. It's supposed to be good. You know, not seeing it. Okay, now you're just like you're a square. You know what I mean? Like you don't fit in anywhere. Nobody's that extreme. When you have an addiction, you're extreme. When you want to give something up, you have to get extreme. He's saying, do whatever it is you have to do. And this is the other problem that sometimes happens. Job says this, I made a covenant, I made a promise. And maybe this promise was to God, or maybe this promise is just to himself, saying, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not putting myself in that position to lust anymore. I mean, I really did not need to see all of those Super Bowl commercials. Because basically saying, buy this car, sexy woman. What do the two have in common? Nothing. But I hope it aroused some interest in you for one or the other. Because the girl doesn't come with the car. So why is she in the commercial? Sex sells. So we do what we need to do to say, I'm not, you know, Judy and I have had this for many years. And it sounds really weird, I know. We do not go to the beach. We do not go to the beach. I don't know if you've noticed that sometimes when girls, not my family, but some girls at the beach hardly wear anything. I do not need to be there. For the sake of my purity and for the sake of Jesus, I'm not going. And so sometimes wow, that's pretty strong, isn't it? Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. I don't need to be there because now would you ask me then? Well, if a pretty girl with a string bikini walked by, would you look? Of course I would. What do you think? I am an idiot. Right? Of course I would. Would I lust? I pray not. But you know something? I don't need that image in my mind. I don't need it in my mind because this is the next part. Oh, this is weird. It's in the context of sexual immorality. It's not in the context of you stealing from the local grocery store. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than to have your whole body thrown into hell. Well, sexually, I know what people can do with their hands. Right? People can be involved in sexual stimulation with their friend, their partner, their girlfriend, their boyfriend, or even with themselves. And this is part of the problem with pornography. Viagra, it's big. One reason why it's so big, it's not the only reason. Sometimes people have truly sexual dysfunction. But there's a big problem when there's a guy looking at pornography every day and masturbating, and his wife is wondering, well, how come we're not having sex at home? He's already had it. And he's not thinking about you, sweetie. That's sad. This is the problem with pornography. And I know people in the world say, oh, there's no problem with pornography. So, not a show of hands, but how many women would be okay to say, well, my husband is going to make love to me while he's thinking about another woman that he's been fantasizing about? See, we know this is not okay. And anybody in the world would say, you know, you may do that, but that does not make a marriage. That's not a Valentine's present to your wife. There's nothing romantic about it. There's nothing pure about it. There's nothing that's going to build a relationship with a man and a woman that are married. This is not helping anything. So he's saying, do what you have to do to get serious about it. And so in the book of Proverbs, in chapter 7, verses 1 and 2, we're going to go through this first section pretty quick. Perhaps Solomon, who had many, many issues with women, many issues with women. He was married to 600 women, and he had 300 women, we would call them mistresses, on the side. That's 900 women that he was involved with, probably most of them sexually. Some people say that he wasn't involved with them all sexually. He says, he's trying to pass this along to his children, perhaps even to his own son, and to say, don't make the same mistakes that I made. My son, keep my words. Store up my commands within you. Keep my commands, and you will live. That's what we're talking about. I want to live. I don't just want to live a long life. I want to live a good life. I want to live a happy life. Keep my teachings as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you're my sister. And call kinsmen, understanding your kinsmen. And they will keep you from the adulteress. Following good advice, following wisdom, making better choices will keep you from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words. I wonder what this would look like. I wonder if we could say, Solomon, can you give me a little bit more information? What are you saying? How does this play out? I'm glad you asked. Because he answers the question. It follows here in verse 6. He's just telling a story. Call it a 50 Shades of Grey story. But there's nothing gray about it. It's quite black and white. So here's the story. I looked out the window of my house. And I looked through the lattice. Let's just, he looked through the blinds. He's just looking outside. And I saw among the simple. And I noticed the young men and a youth who lacked judgment. So here's a young, he's naive. He's just, you know, he doesn't know. He's never been down this way before. And he's wandering in places he shouldn't go. But he's just not really been educated. Maybe he's not been warned. Maybe his dad never told him. But he was going down the street near her corner and walking in the direction of her house. And it was at twilight, as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in. So now you know he's in the wrong place at the wrong time of day. It's getting to be evening. It's starting to get dark, and he's walking near somebody's house, and he shouldn't be there, because look what happens next. Then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute, with crafty intent. Sounds like she knows what she wants. She's got her ways. She is loud and she's defiant. Her feet never stay at home. And now in the street, now in the squares, at every corner she lurks. She's looking for somebody, and you know who she's looking for? She's looking for someone just like this young guy. A little bit naive, a little bit foolish, a little bit ignorant. And so she took hold of him, and she kissed him. Now, can you imagine how he would have felt at that point? He's never really done this before, but she just comes out. He doesn't have to be looking for her anymore. He doesn't have to try to seduce her or speak with her. You know, try to allure her. He doesn't have to put on the moves. He may not even have moves. He's just not that experienced. Oh, she's got the experience though. She knows what she's doing. And so she took hold of him and she kissed him, and with a brazen face. In other words, I mean, there's no shame. There's no blushing. This is what she said to him. I have fellowship offerings at home. Today I have fulfilled my vows. I came out to meet you. I looked for you and I have found you. I've covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt. I've perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let's drink deep of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. She knows what she's talking. I think he knows what she's talking about. It's pretty clear. It's pretty obvious. It's the invitation. Look what she says. My husband's not at home. She's free to express. She's married. But her husband's not home. He's gone on a long journey. He took his purse filled with money. He will not be home till the full moon. We've got plenty of time. We are not going to get caught. No one's going to know. We can do this. In the morning, if we just decide to leave, nothing's changed. Nobody will find out. It will just be for one night. But look in verse 21, with persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. And all at once, he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose, till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare. Listen. Little knowing, it will cost him his life. He's going to go with her, and it's going to be a fun time, no doubt. And he, in the middle of it, is going to think, this is what life is all about. This is living life to the maximum. This is the pleasures of life. And in the morning, when he wakes up, he's dead. Oh, not physically. He'll get up and he'll go back to his home. He'll go back to his work. Maybe he'll go back to his family. But he will never be the same again. Never. Oh, but what if he turns to God and he gets forgiveness? Oh, he can be forgiven. But he will never be the same again. Too much has gone on. He has seen too much. He's experienced too much. Those memories he will never be able to erase. The guilt he will struggle with perhaps the rest of his life. And he may even get caught. What's worse, he may never get caught. And he may think, well, I can do it again. It's a high price for someone to pay. This is what things like pornography do. It's very seductive. It's very secretive. It's very subtle. You think it's not that big of a deal. Just one thing when we think about how far people go. In case you don't know, and maybe hopefully we don't know, but you can go online and you can get pornography for free. And if you're looking for pornography, or even if you're looking for a nice romantic romance novel like 50 Shades of Grey, oh, I just need to read it once. I need to just look at the picture once. Boy, you know, you think if I could just see that picture once, I'd be fine. But you know, people that look at pornography, they don't look at one picture. They look at 30 or 40 or 100 pictures in a night. And guess what? They're all free. So how in the world is the pornography industry one of the most lucrative? In other words, they're making tons and tons and tons of money. How do they do that? Because after you've seen about 2,000 or 3,000 free pictures, you know what you want? More. I need more. And sadly, you know what people go to? More degrading pictures. Pictures that involve you know, what we would today call extreme sex or bondage sex. You know, I know even in Detroit we had, you know, the guy out in East Point that murdered his wife, right? Who was involved in a sexual lifestyle. So how do you get that far? Who does that? Who builds a dungeon? Besides the 50 Shades of Grey guy, by the way, that's what he's into, the dungeon. I know, it sounds very romantic, I know. Don't get carried away with the romance of the dungeon. It's like, no, we think, wow, that's sick! Who does this? People that don't get enough. Oh, you know, just the pictures don't do so much for me anymore. How do you think people become rapists? Most guys don't wake up one day and say, I think I'm going to go rape a girl. It's not what happens. It's a continual feeding, just like the heroin addict. You know, it's the little bit that I used to take is not enough. It doesn't do enough for me. It doesn't give me the same high, the same thrill, the same fun. I need more. And that's what this is about. All right. So as we close, this is God's will, that you should be sanctified, that you should avoid sexual morality. In other words, he's saying stay away from it. Don't go near it. That each of you should learn how to control his own body. And I don't know if you follow the songs. Ken chose a lot of songs that had to do with control, self-control, take control. God's going to control me. I'm going to, you know, I want to be self-controlled. Controlling your own body, controlling your own appetites in a way that is holy and honorable. But look what he goes on to say. Not in passionate lusts like the heathen, who do not know God, and in this matter, no one should wrong his brother or take advantage of him. And the Lord will punish men for all such sins. You see, when you take advantage of somebody, is that something a Christian would do? I mean, even if you're dating, to say, well, you know, I love my girlfriend or my boyfriend, you know, we're not married, maybe we're engaged, you know, I just love them so much. I think we're just gonna, you know, we have sex once in a while. Really? Is it? You know what, that's taking advantage of somebody. You know why? Especially if they call themselves a Christian, you call yourself a Christian. Like, is that the Christian thing to do? I'm going to cause you to fall into sin because I have no self-control. Maybe you have no self-control. We're just going to do this. So let's just sin together. And hopefully there won't be long-term consequences. Hopefully we may be able to get out of it. Hopefully we can find forgiveness. As a matter of fact, I think I love you so much, I don't really care that much even if you go to heaven. So come with me, enjoy sin with me. That's what he's saying. Don't take advantage of people sexually. Are you kidding me? You call yourself a Christian? So God's going to punish these kinds of sins. Ephesians 5:3, among you there must not even be a hint of sexual immorality. That's no thinking, no talking, no looking. No, you know, you don't even think about it. You don't talk about it. There's not any kind of greed because these are improper for God's holy people. And do you not know that the wicked will not inherit the kingdom of God? And then he lists some things four of those things. The first one he mentions, sexually immoral. Third one, I just skipped over the second one. I just listed the sexual sins. Adulterers. Four is male prostitutes. Five is homosexual offenders. He's saying these people will not inherit. These people will not go to heaven. Because they're living in sin. But then the good thing about it is, this is what he says. This is what some of you were. And the were means you used to be that, but you're not like that anymore. You've given that up. You have repented and you've chosen a new life. You used to be like that. And what happened? You were washed. You were sanctified. You were justified in the name of Christ Jesus and in the Holy Spirit. You used to be that way. Not only did you used to be that way, but now you've been forgiven. It's in the past. And this is what Paul is saying to a church that, hey, they've been struggling with it for a long time in Corinth. But that's in their past now. They have a new life. They have a new start. And they've gotten forgiveness. This is what it's all about. To find forgiveness in Christ. I don't know where you are today in your Christian walk. I'm not saying that maybe this is something you've been struggling with, but maybe you realize your sense of, without God, I'm lost. Without God, I have no hope. Without God, I need a relationship. I need forgiveness. I need a new start. I need to put whatever it was that I have been doing or I am doing, I need to put that in the past. And so we're going to sing a song that talks about the voice of Jesus and the invitation to say, come. And receive life. Come and receive forgiveness. Come and receive the new start. And you're going to need that power to help you to overcome whatever sin you're dealing with. If we could encourage you in your Christian walk, if today you want to be baptized into Christ to begin again, let's stand, let's sing together, and you can let your needs be known.